I don't know if you can hear Boz Skaggs there in the background on the home stereo. This is Bob Knowles, and this is a program called What's Your Story? Tonight, I'm not here. I'm in Geelong having dinner with my daughter Zoe because it's her birthday. However, I have pre-recorded two fabulous interviews, one with Margaret Glance, well-known local glass artist, and one with Pat Shannon, who is a well-known artist here in Apollo Bay. I don't think I need to introduce either of these women if you're local, and if you're not, well, they can introduce themselves. Let's start with Margaret Glance on What's Your Story? So here we are in Glance Twice. It's a studio here in Apollo Bay, a glass studio mostly, and we're talking to Margaret, now Margaret Smith, but you, of course, were Margaret
Glance.
Margaret Glance.
Yeah.
And were you born Margaret Glance?
Yes.
Okay. Where did that happen?
In Footscray in Melbourne. And I lived there for the first 5 years of my life, and then my parents moved to Apollo Bay.
Okay. Have you got any idea why they did that? What madness possessed them?
They had a holiday house here. They had a business in Melbourne. My dad got sick with cancer of the larynx.
Mm.
He could no longer work in his pattern-making business, so they basically had to change their whole lifestyle. They put the house in Melbourne in Cathcart Street on the market and the house in Apollo Bay here on the market. And whatever sold first was they were going to move into the
move
other house.
The other
they
okay.
sold the house in Cathcart Street in Maidstone and moved here.
So they were gamblers a bit. That was a real let fate toss the coin. And
well, they were, and they then sort of bought a block of land across the road in Gambier Street. A lot of people sort of know my background, or most of my background.
Mm.
They then bulldozed the block and built what was Hayley Reef Motel, which is now called Great Ocean View Motel, that's owned by Jimmy Matthews.
Okay.
So they built that, established a motel, put a restaurant on there, housed the CRB boys that made the roads and fed them and accommodated them for years and
so,
everybody else.
So they were, it was a pretty busy house where you were growing up. They weren't mucking around.
Our residence was across the road in Gambier Street. It's one of the houses on stilts. It's still standing in near its original condition. And the motel was across the road, so we used to have to get up as kids and trot across down to the motel and have breakfast. Later on, they built a house behind the motel and sold the house on stilts, and we were then behind the motel.
How many kids in the family?
Three. Two other sisters, Julie and Rhonda. We all went to school down here. Rhonda and I ended up going to a boarding school in Ballarat for the last 2 years of our schooling.
Mm.
But we all had horses, and we were involved in sport, and there was a lot of, I used to go fishing all the time. And
so what was better, school in Apollo Bay or school in Ballarat?
I would say depends on what you're after. School in Apollo Bay was really good. There was lots of sport. Badminton was really big here. I used to fish all the time. I rode my bike all the time. I knew everybody. I really enjoyed going to school here. Ballarat was very strict. I was in a Catholic boarding school, which was all girls. There was pretty much nothing to do on weekends, so to me it was really quite boring. Lots of the boarders went home for weekends. I didn't, because there was really no transport between Ballarat and Apollo Bay.
Mm.
And my parents were too busy to drive to Ballarat every weekend and pick me up and then take me back.
Mm.
So
okay.
My dad was very sick for a long period of time, and Mum, looked after him and did all the work and things. So
did you get up to mischief when you got bored?
At boarding school?
Mm.
Not much. No. There's nothing to do. You're stuck out. You're not in Ballarat itself. St. Martin's was outside, out at Mount Clear. There was nowhere to go. You had a two-hour curfew. The nuns were very strict. It was... the education was a huge difference with what we were learning here to what we were learning there. There were some really good parts about going to boarding school and things, but yeah, it was quite lonely for a long time, and a lot of people probably find the same when they first go to a different school, trying to mix in and you know, meet new people and...
Did you make any particular friends from that time in Ballarat?
Yeah, but not really many that I still keep in contact with. There was another girl from here that went to boarding school, and which is Anne Newton, or Anne, well, she was Beaumont and now Carr. So, but what they did is they basically separated, you know, kids that knew each other, so you're forced to make other friends and things. So, but there was not much mischief to get up to.
What about in Apollo Bay? Did you get up to mischief?
Not really. My parents were really strict. So even when I was 18, I had the pubs closed at 10. I had to be home at 10:15. So you live under their roof. I had to live by their rules. I thought it was pretty tough at the time. But looking back, I really appreciate what they did for me, because it sort of made, I think it made me a better person to have, you know, really good boundaries. And, and I didn't get up to some of the stuff that I knew other people were getting up to.
Other people, like your best mate, Kate Carr?
No. Kate and I are very close. Trish Goodlett, there was lots of people that, you know, I'm still really good friends with when Kate would talk to Camille and Camille's friends, that they can't believe that Kate and I have been friends for, you know, over 30 years. You know, it's hard for a young kid to understand when they're not even 18 that they've had a friend, you know, for that length of time. But, we had fun. You know, kids look out for each other, and I think that's one thing about a small town, that people do look out for each other, and even people that are older look out for younger kids and make sure they're all right and, you know, that they get home safely and do things. So that's one really good thing about, you know, a small community.
Yeah, the other is probably that you see the consequence. You know, those kids that misbehaved badly.
Yeah.
You all knew who they were.
Yeah.
And you saw the consequences of that.
Yeah. And they probably don't achieve... you know, some people achieve a lot in life and some people sort of don't, and it's about sort of opportunity and trying to make the best of, you know, what you've got, I think. And, you know, be happy with yourself and do what you can.
So where did... you met Kate at school?
Yeah. Yeah, well, she only just sort of arrived at school, and then I was... I was shipped off to boarding school. You know, my parents basically packed my bags for me. But I used to see her weekends. We used to spend a lot of time at the beach.
Yeah.
You know, just those sort of days, we sort of were involved a little bit with the surf club, and, you know, met people that came down from Melbourne, and, you know, we'd go to the pitches and, you know...
So the boys that came from Melbourne to surf would have been pretty exciting fellas to meet?
But we sort of, nothing sort of eventuated there. They were just friends, basically.
Okay.
With the people in the surf club. But there was sort of a time when, you know, the football club and the surf club really quite, you know, were segregated, and if the surf club, you know, crew came over to the pub, there was fights, you know, we'd all be standing along the windows, you know, getting out of the way at the end of the night, and so it was pretty wild in the pubs down here, you know, when I was a kid.
So this is late 70s or...?
No, in the 80s.
80s, yeah. Okay. Right.
So around sort of 82 to probably 85. I didn't sort of hang around. I once I finished school, I always wanted to be a hairdresser.
Mm.
My parents tried to convince me not to be.
Mm.
But that one of my friends down here, Diane Welsh, she was one, you know, best friend all through school. Her parents decided to send her to board to hairdressing college in Melbourne, and with that, my parents said, "Well, you always want to do it. You've finished year 12, you know, we'll send you if you still want to do it." So I went and did hairdressing in Melbourne. So then I was back here. Some weekends I was on a really tight budget. I had to live on $50 a week. And that was for my transport, my electricity, my phone, my food, everything.
Wow.
Very tight budget. I came down here, you know, quite a few weekends through my 12-month hairdressing course. When I finished that, I then went to Camperdown and lived in Camperdown for about 14 months hairdressing there, and then I came back here and opened my own salon at 22.
So you weren't really interested in working for anyone else or living in the city, by the sound of it?
I liked some aspects of Melbourne, but when it gets to a really nice sunny day, there's nothing like green grass and fresh air and being at the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in Melbourne, you don't get any of that, and you've got to drive to Williamstown Beach, was the closest for me.
Mm.
And I basically, you know, would get down there saying, "This isn't a beach." You know, like, "I'm sorry, I'm not going in that water. No, this isn't a beach." And I'd turn around and go back to Footscray. So that was, I'd try and save my money so I could come down here most weekends.
So you set up your own hairdressing salon here in Apollo Bay.
Yeah.
And how did that go? Tell me about that.
That was back in 1985. The TAB was closing down, which was next to Bruises. Mm. I think Vicky Lurkey might have been in hospital, and I used to do a bit of mobile hairdressing. I worked in Camperdown, as I said, and lived there, but I'd still come here some weekends, and would used to cut people's hair all around town, just doing mobile, trying to earn some extra money. And then the TAB was closing down, so I asked Keith Lurkey if I could lease the shop. Had no idea what I was doing or anything. He was a wonderful man that really helped me to establish a business.
Mm.
And I ran that for nearly 8 years. And so, yeah, that brought me back to Apollo Bay. A lot of hard work running your own business, as I'm sure people like Steph Ran and the Florist is finding out. It's, very hard in a small town. You've got to do it mostly yourself.
But it put you right in the middle of all the conversations and the gossip and the rest of it.
It's really amazing that, you know, to live down here, to see kids that, you know, and I used to cut their hair when they were babies right through, you know, for a long time. When I got out of the salon, I sold my lease rather than I found it hard to sell the business. So I sold my lease to Ken Smythe. That he then started Smythe Real Estate, which Noel Tannis now runs. But with that, with selling only the lease, I was able to continue doing mobile hairdressing. So for years, I've still worked hairdressing in Apollo Bay and been working, you know, up at Otway Health doing the elderly people up there, or people that if they've been to hospital, they can't get to a salon and things like that.
Okay, so you're a busy young woman professionally.
Yes.
You're certainly very busy socially.
Yes.
How busy were you romantically?
I had a bit of fun, but we won't go, you know, like, I told you I didn't want to answer any questions like this.
But you were essentially a single woman for a long time, or?
Oh, no, I had quite a few long-term relationships, but it's funny, I never really wanted to get married.
Mm.
I was very much into working, getting a career. I bought a house when I was maybe 28 or 26 or something myself, and so I really worked hard to try and pay that off myself. And I don't know, I think growing up in a business perspective, with when you see your parents work so hard, changes your perspective on life a little bit. So I never felt the need, I suppose, to get married. I was engaged a couple of times, but I just
didn't quite make it to the altar.
No.
So do you think that drive to do, you know, to work and be self-sufficient and those things came more from your parents, or do you think that was something that was in you anyway?
No, probably more from my parents. I know that we were, you know, I grew up in the times, and I know a lot of people in Apollo Bay were exactly the same. Everybody was pretty poor.
Mm.
You know, the only time I got given anything was birthdays and Christmas was, you know, a stocking with my a new pair of Dunlop Volleys for school for the year, my Texters, you know, some hairbands, some lollies, you know, a set of clothes if I was lucky. From the age of sort of 15, I had to work, and I don't think my parents sort of ever bought me an item of clothing after that.
Mm. And I guess also your father being
sick
would have caused you to look to yourself to secure your future and your financial security and stuff, I guess.
No, not really. I sort of, he was just my dad, and he was, you know, probably different to everybody else. I think, you know, people can be very cruel to people that are different. Mm. And I remember my mother talking about how they, you know, looked at land here, and they were, you know, in the golf club here and things, where Dad was playing golf and everybody was lovely. But I know that she said they went down to Port Arlington at one stage and were looking at buying there, and somebody basically said to her, you know, at the real estate agent, they didn't want to even show them the house. They said, "We don't want people like you living here."
Wow.
So, you know, people were very, well, too, it's back in the days when, you know, you didn't see anybody of colour or a different nationality walk up the street of Apollo Bay. If somebody new came into Apollo Bay, you knew that they didn't live here. You know, it wasn't a big tourist town. I grew up in the days where there was, you know, like Green Acres, the two pubs for accommodation, Bay Pines, Coonjeree Guest House and Grandview Holiday Flats. You know, and for my parents to build a motel, that was really like, you're taking a huge risk here.
Mm. So, and some people have said that in that, especially in the 80s, there was an attitude of us and them in Apollo Bay in terms of the tourists and the visitors and the locals
No, I don't think so. I think people were very you know, they were happy for new people to come in.
Mm.
And I think they still are. It sort of helps with employment and everything. I get really a bit disappointed sometimes living here, that I look at what this town was like when I grew up down here, and, you know, 40 years later, some things have still not changed, which is really disappointing. And one of those facts is, you know, as a kid, I used to go fishing, and a lot of people did down here. The fish were, you know, it was amazing going fishing over at the harbour. But, you know, you go over there, there's no facilities.
Mm.
And, you know, for me as a kid, if I had to go to the toilet, I used to have to get on my bike, pack up my fishing rod and all my gear, get on my bike and go and ride up to the golf club and go to the bathroom there. And then go back down to the harbour and you know, set myself up again. And there's a facility down there, but it's limited hours that it's open.
Mm.
You know, I'd really like to see, you know, decent toilet facilities over at that harbour.
Yeah.
And because it's a beautiful place to be.
Mm.
And I don't think it's sort of used as much as what it should be. I mean, it's lovely that the co-op put the new deck out there, and that'll be really good, but there needs to be better, you know, facilities and walking tracks and things.
There are some big issues around that, that's true.
Yeah.
So now you've been a hairdresser for a while.
You've
seen off a couple of would-be husbands and told them, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
And when did you start getting involved with making jewellery and the more... So I guess hairdressing is a creative thing, but how did that happen? And
look, I was... I have to think there. I used to always go down to... My mother was living... When Mum and Dad left here, they went to Geelong. Mum always said Dad stuck his hand up at the wrong time at the auction because they were going to go to Queensland. But then they didn't make it, and they both pursued art in Geelong. So Mum was into china painting and porcelain dolls and things. Dad went and had art lessons. Mum used to try and go to markets and sell her china painting, and she used to, you know, find it really hard to get the money back to buy more greenware and more paints. And then her and a friend went and did glass in RMIT with Dick Stumbles, and he's sort of a fairly well-known art glass artist. And every time I used to go to Geelong, she used to try and get me involved into making plates and doing something, and I didn't want a bar of it because I was just too busy wanting to go shopping and go to pictures, and, you know, my time was limited. I wasn't going to be cleaning a piece of glass and doing, you know, watching it melt through kilns. But the first piece I did, I was sort of hooked after that. Okay. And so then I continued doing hairdressing so I could get money to buy more glass and do more. And it just grew bigger and bigger. 3 years ago, I opened Glance Twice Glass Studio here in Apollo Bay. And this was sort of an outlet that I could come and make my things and, you know, still sell it at the market and sell it from here and offer classes and bits and pieces if people wanted to do glass as well. And so... Yeah, I basically stopped hairdressing too because I fell ill and just do this now. But it's really rewarding to do something that people love as much as you do. And I get so many people that come back year after year that are still wearing my jewellery, you know, from 8 years ago, and they're still buying it.
Can you charge them a royalty?
No, no.
Does it pay its way?
Good question. It's like anything. It's either a feast or a famine when you do things like this. You really never recoup your time that you put in. But to me now, with my life, it's all about quality of life and what I really enjoyed doing. So... You know, I hate doing making glass studs. They're the smallest, fiddliest things that you'll do, and if you bump the table, they all wobble and they fall over, and then the glue slides and everything. But it's really quite uncanny that then I'll see somebody that's wearing my earrings, and I'll go, "Oh, I made those," and they'll go, "Oh, yeah, I just love them," you know. Yeah. And people send me emails and say, "I saw somebody in Darwin wearing your pendant," or I saw, you know, people they take them overseas and. It's really a rewarding thing.
So when did you... Because you're now not Margaret Glance, you're Margaret Smith.
Yeah.
So when did you meet Russell?
Oh, I met him when I was a kid.
Oh, okay. Yes. So you've known each other a long time.
Yeah, a long time. He actually... Well, I was sitting on the harbour and... Well, I knew all the fishermen and everything because years ago they used to give you bait. That, you know, an octopus had attacked a crayfish... They used to give you the cray tails for bait. So, or you knew all the people at the co-op and things. And there was a lot of us that used to fish, and we'd go home with buckets of fish sometimes, you know, like the water would, you know, flood the low landing. But, yeah, with Russell, I one of my memories was when I was a kid and I was fishing and I was sitting next to my fishing rod and Trevally took the line and the rod off the harbour. And it sunk to the bottom, and I was sitting there crying because...
You lost your rod.
Yeah, and there was no... My parents were very strict, and there was no way I could go home without that fishing rod. And I was somebody that couldn't swim very well. That was sort of one of the downsides of living here, I suppose, growing up as a kid. We had to learn to swim in the harbour.
Okay.
You know, or the Barron River. You know, not really nice when there's seaweed and things wrapping around your legs when you're a kid and frightened. But he ended up getting a gaff and getting it back, and And yeah, I thought he was a really nice man. I've known him for years. I cut his kids' hair. I knew Penny really well. Still, you know, know Penny really well. And I always liked bike riding, and so did he. So we used to go bike riding. We've always sort of been friends. But, you know, circles change and they come back together. And yeah, a couple of years ago, I sort of basically said, oh, did he want to go for a bike ride? Mm. So we started bike riding again, and yeah.
And romance blossomed. Romance blossomed.
We got to know each other a lot better. We get on really well and have so many things in common. You know, and you know, we laugh all the time. So yeah, it's funny.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. And in the next 3 or 5 years, how do you look at your life now?
I don't really know. I think getting sick or, you know, getting cancer.
Because you had life-threatening illness, yeah.
It's something that I still find really hard to say that word. Mm. It sort of, yeah, changes you.
Sure.
So you just sort of take one day at a time and keep hoping that you're going to get good results every time you go to the doctors.
But you have so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I go back for oncology every 6 months now rather than 3 months. So I'm finished a clinical trial that I was doing. I don't know. I sort of don't know with my business, with what to do. I'd really like to travel.
Yep.
I haven't sort of travelled much at all. So I'd like to see a bit more of Australia, you know. Mm. I'd really like to do the camper van thing.
Yep.
Russell thinks that the A-frame van's a good idea, but no, I sort of want somewhere where I can drive and we don't have to pack up a van every morning and just...
But still, Russell would be a pretty good travelling buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, he's good. He doesn't stop. He doesn't sit still for very long.
No, that's true. That's how he keeps trim.
Yeah. As for me, I stop. I'm getting wider, but that's okay. You know, everybody says I'm looking good and I'm looking healthy, so, you know, that's a good thing.
The community radio licence for Apollo Bay comes from Colac. The group at OCR FM, by their licence, are meant to broadcast to Apollo Bay, Lawn, Camperdown, and just about everywhere in between. How one small volunteer group can achieve this is beyond me. We have applied to ACMA, the Broadcasting Authority, to have a separate FM frequency for Apollo Bay, and they have refused, citing the existence of 3OCR FM. We have tried to work with 3OCR FM over many years and been defeated mostly by the distance between here and Colac. You know, when you're paying everything yourself, driving up and down, and then there's the technology, the cost of the technology of connecting the two places, and then, of course, there's the cultural differences. So we've tried and failed to work with 3OCR FM. We are now appealing again to our community and to the Broadcasting Authority and to the politicians to grant this little community what it really needs and deserves, its own community radio broadcasting license. And the work we can do with such a license in terms of talking to tourists and issuing safety information and knitting together the social fabric of this community, well, it's fabulous. The opportunity is, you know, there's a will here, there's great support for the local community radio station, so we just need to keep on pushing. So if you see a petition or someone passing a hat, remember, support 3ABR, Apollo Bay Radio, the only local community radio service to the most southerly village on the Australian mainland.
Let's go back to the beginning, because that's what we do on What's Your Story.
Right.
Where were you born?
Melbourne.
Yeah.
Date?
If you like.
No, not particularly.
So, big family? A big family?
No, just one brother.
Okay.
And lived in Melbourne. I lived in Melbourne till I went to Europe for four years, you know, when I was sort of in the early 20s.
Yeah.
And did some painting and went to classes there and just had a really interesting time, actually.
So growing up, you came from a reasonably privileged family, or?
No, well, my father was an architect, so I suppose he had education anyway.
Yeah.
But, yes, we were comfortably off, not rich by any means.
No. And you went to private schools when you were
kids? Yes.
What are your memories of those?
Oh, it was a good year, a few years.
Mm.
Do you want the name of the school or not? Doesn't matter.
I don't mind, but it's more to do with your memory.
Well, actually, it was a good Melbourne Girls Grammar.
Yeah.
And we had a fantastic headmistress.
Mm.
Who wanted everybody to do things, not sort of lie around and do nothing.
Do you think that's a...
Very good art teacher.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Who encouraged me. Mm. So I was encouraged at home and at school.
So art was an early
Yes. Yes, well, when my father was an architect, you know, they didn't have all the equipment. They had to do quite a lot of drawing.
Okay.
And, you know, houses and things. Mm. He enjoyed drawing anyway.
Yeah.
So okay. It was an early start to using a brush.
Right. And what about academically otherwise? Were you...
No, not good. Just sort of...
kind of poodled along, yeah.
No good at maths at all.
Right.
And... just sort of so. I wasn't terribly interested, actually.
Mm.
I just painted away.
Just painted. Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and as a young teenager, you were still you went to Melbourne Grammar all the way, Girls Grammar all the way through.
Oh, actually, I left there early because the war started.
Ah, okay.
And the school was moved out to country, up north. Where was it? Healesville or somewhere like that. So I left in about, into something like that.
Okay. So how did that affect your life, the war?
Went to art school.
All right. so hardly at all.
No. My father went to war up in Queensland.
Oh, did he?
In Queensland.
Okay. In the Home Guard or...?
No, it was... what was he? I've forgotten.
Mm.
Anyway, you know, it was... It was a land occupation job. Mm. He was a bit old to go off anywhere else.
Yeah.
Active service, you know.
And do you remember much of the conversation about the war or what it was like, how you felt?
Well, there were a lot of ex-servicemen around.
Mm.
And at that stage, I think I was at... I was going to night classes at Melbourne National thing.
Yeah.
And so there were quite a few ex-servicemen
At the end of the war.
Yes.
And so during the war you would have been how old, roughly?
Oh, in my late teens.
Late teens. Yes. So did it make you feel concerned for your safety or worried?
No. We had a nice sort of after school growing up.
Okay. So you've had a social life and went to movies and swimming and shows and all the things that young people do.
And I worked later on at one of the canteens for servicemen.
Okay. So So you met a few servicemen then?
Yes, as a young woman? Yes, and I actually, when I went to Europe, I stayed with the family of one serviceman who was in the north of England. His family were in the north of England, in a sort of chauffeur-owned house. Which was quite interesting.
So was he a bit of a flame? Was there a bit of...
No. But I think he probably stayed with us a bit,
Okay.
Spent a little bit of time. It's so long ago, I can't really...
It's worth just
thinking back, I mean, that's what this program is about, is what people easily remember and what they happily want to talk about.
Yes, I've been so busy with what I've been doing in the last 20 years or even 30 that anything before that's just sort of...
It's a bit of a blur.
Yes.
Well, okay, then we'll get to more recent times, but I do need to ask about Pat Shannon, the adolescent becoming the woman and becoming aware of men and relationships and those kinds of things. What was that part of your life like?
Well, I had lots of boyfriends and a great flame was someone with the Old Vic Company when they were here. So I sort of chased him back to England. That was one reason why I went to Europe. But he was married anyway.
Okay.
And it was a bit of a disappointment altogether.
And they tend to be.
And another great love, I think, was someone else who... what was it? Where was he? There was some complication there, anyway. The two favourite males probably were both... Both had complications.
Some complications. But you weren't. But you weren't backward in coming forward in terms of announcing your feelings and pursuing your heart.
No. I was encouraged. I didn't have to push very. I didn't push. I just sort of fell into things, really.
And was this as much to do with your nature or to do with your parents encouraging you to follow?
I think it was a lot to do with being at art school.
Ah, of course, yeah.
You know, people, and, you know, things like Matcham Skipper and out-of-town sort of artists and so forth. I spent a lot of time... I had a studio in Flinders Lane.
Mm-hmm.
At one stage, and you know, I was sort of, I lived at home, but I spent a lot of time with the art world, and they were all quite mad.
Indeed, and still are.
Yes.
Thankfully.
Yes.
So you were really committed to this, the bohemian
lifestyle.
Artistic life from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And who in art inspired you? Who didn't really spoke to you?
As a person?
Yeah, when you were younger, when you were...
There was a German a man here who came out, you know, escaped from Europe, and he and his wife were very sort of interesting people.
Mm.
I think he influenced me quite a lot. As far as painting, yes.
And
the European sort of lifestyle. Yeah.
And the European lifestyle. And so all the classic masters, Van Gogh.
Well, Picasso and Van Gogh.
And so, all right, so now you're 24 or 5?
Yeah, no, I left here when I was 27.
Yep. And lived in...
I was working here at Prestige doing design work when it had a design place. And they paid some of my accommodation and sent me off to Europe on a boat. I arrived, I had to go to the north of France, so I got off at Marseille, having had a few French lessons, you know, after school. And so I was alone from Marseille up to Paris and found somewhere to live.
That must have been very exciting.
Well, I wouldn't like to do it now, but it was pretty safe then.
Mm.
So I found a place on left. I've been reading about the Left Bank, you know, forever.
Yeah.
So I made a beeline for there and stayed at a place right in the centre of everything, in a side street.
Yeah.
And so I sort of absorbed that for a while, and then I went up to the north of France to this exposition of of desire for prestige.
Yeah.
I had to send back a few sketches and things.
Mm.
And then I went back to Paris. I spent, you know, a lot of time there.
So you fell in love with Paris?
Yes.
Did you fall in love in Paris as well?
No. I was weary, very weary. Very weary then, especially being alone.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And funny things happened, like wanting to buy a bottle of wine and ended up with a packet of wood timber. So then I went over to London, which I found terribly boring.
Well, after Paris, and
yes.
What year would this be? Would it be?
This was about 50-something.
Late 50s? Or
early 50s,
early
50s, yes.
Wow, so it was.
Yes, and now this is where I'm trying to remember.
Don't press the details.
Yes, anyhow, I was right. Living, I found somewhere, there were a lot of Australians in London, you know, I shared a flat, that's right.
Mm.
And so that was good. There were three women and three Australians, one of, I knew two of them, yeah, and one American. And so that was my base, actually, for quite a while. And I did get a terrible clerical job. It was just folding papers or something or other.
How long did that last? About a year, folding papers.
Yeah. And then I collected some cash from home, naturally, and went off again to Paris with, who did I go with? Oh, someone from home, a dentist, that's right, a friend of mine from Australia, went off on a scooter.
Right.
Down to the south of France and Spain and so forth for a month or something. So I did that on and off for a few years, actually. Yeah. And then I met Ian Shannon, who was interesting.
So how did you meet him?
Through the Australian lot.
Okay. So he was an Australian, he wasn't an artist?
No, he was an economist.
Okay. That's a long way from a
Yes, he was a brother of Michael Shannon, who's a painter. So... And he was at Oxford.
All right.
So, you know, one thing led to another through my life. It sort of fell into place more than by organisation.
So there was no love at first sight. It just fell. It just developed
With Ian Shannon, I met him through these friends in the flat, and then he pinched something of mine, which meant I had to go back to Oxford. I had to go to Oxford to collect it. Mm. That was the whole idea. So that's how it started.
Okay.
So we were married there after some, you know, a couple of years or something. And then I went to Oxford and I was living there for a while. And then we had to he had to come back. His, his degree was over. He applied for a job in somewhere exotic, which he didn't get, with the Food and Health Organization.
Okay.
Anyway, didn't get, so we came back here. And then he was at Melbourne University doing something. I started going to painting classes here, picking it all up again, and it continued from there.
Yeah. So when did you start exhibiting in a kind of?
Where in Paris?
Well, you were exhibiting in Paris.
Yes, in group shows.
Okay. Yeah.
And then when I came back here, I was with the Contemporary Art Society on the council and so forth, and had exhibitions, one-man shows at various places in Melbourne.
So has it always been landscape? That
No, it was a lot of nudes, lots and lots of nudes at one stage. There's one somewhere here, but it's not in this room.
There's a great one that Sandra Skeen famously modelled for.
Yes. I love drawing Sandra.
Yeah, she likes being drawn.
Yes. That was what made her good. And also because she was so, pleased with herself.
Mm.
I really enjoyed her.
So you just had Mark, one child?
No, I've got a daughter.
Oh, a daughter, okay.
And two granddaughters in their 20s.
All right.
And they live in Melbourne.
Mm.
And my daughter went to art school too, and then sort of gave it away because she needed some money.
Mm-hmm.
And... let's see. No, she has. She might do some more work when she stops working.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the granddaughters are fine. They're doing interesting things.
Very well. And so, what brought you here to Apollo Bay? Did you come,
Mark?
Okay.
Because he had to get away. He has illness.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Mm.
Serious sort of things, and it was too much for him in Melbourne.
Just too chaotic and too much going on. Yeah.
So we came down. He came down here by himself, and after a year or so, it sounded as though he needed a bit of company here.
Yeah. So, and at this point, the marriage is still alive, or?
Oh, no. No, Ian died. We were divorced.
Oh, okay.
And he had two more children in Sydney.
Mm.
So that was when Mark was about five.
All right.
Long.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
I've been a single for a long time.
Yeah, and a signal.
And just didn't really see much point in getting involved again, actually, with children.
Sure.
Especially,
because you had children. And so when did Mark start to get unwell? He was...
Well, it was from a very early age, epilepsy to begin with, but by the time he was... He went to, school, straight school for a while, but he couldn't go too far with that.
Okay. Yep.
So he went to art school again. He really does some very good work.
He does some excellent work.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm quite jealous.
Well, it's
a different style, but it's really very, his work is very good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So... So you came to Apollo Bay, initially with Mark.
He went, yes.
Yeah. Mm. And how did that evolve, and how did the gallery come about in those things?
Well, I had this built.
Yeah.
Because we just keep on running out of space.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to live in the same house, so I fixed up the back place, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been living in the back, which is nice and light, lots of sun.
Mm.
But now that he's up at Otway Health Residential, I've decided to go to the front house, which is warmer. And I'm using part of that as a studio as well.
So, and in the 20 years you've been here, you've not been back to Paris?
No.
Is that something you'd like to do, do you think?
No. I think the memories are too good.
Ah, don't want to besmirch them. Mm.
Yes. Yes. No, I have no wish to go back to Europe.
Okay. So what about life in Apollo Bay?
Well, I like it because it's a better pace.
Mm.
Apart from the weather being a little sort of unpredictable, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Any
good mix of people.
And how does the gallery go? Do you get... Does it? Your exhibitions and the work, how is it well received?
Well, I have a lot of people, all the locals actually have work, so I have to find...
a new market.
Yes. But things crop up.
Mm.
I sold a major painting just last week because one of my granddaughters had... A friend of hers called here to see how things were. She was visiting, staying in a friend's house here, who called in to have a look at the the gallery after this girl, Martha, had gone back to Melbourne. And he really liked that painting so much behind you that he wrote, it was not for sale, and he wrote me a letter to say, you know, would you consider selling it for, you know, I really love it very much. And for more than I had ever thought of charging. So I bought it, I sold it last week.
Oh.
All sorts of things happen.
All sorts of things do. What is it about painting? What does it do for you?
What painting is...
Because you said, no, painting generally, you said before you hadn't had a chance to paint for a month or so and you were missing
it. Yes, yes.
So what happens when you paint? What does it do?
You just become absorbed with what you're doing, really. The same as you would with if you were writing. Or any creative thing. You know, time just sort of goes.
And then how do you know it's finished?
Well, it's sort of easy to do, I think.
Yeah, this is just from experience, you think?
You can't overwork things satisfactorily. And everybody works in a different way. I mean, I take a lot longer on a painting such as this to the pastels.
Okay, yeah.
So there's a lot of difference in the way I work with pastels to paintings. That takes layers and layers, whereas that's an idea, a sketch, and then I do something that starts from the sketch. But it's a much simpler.
When did you... You obviously studied the craft and the art of painting for a long time.
Yes. Well, I went to Swinburne. That was a good art school.
Do you remember when it was that you felt, I'm an artist? That I...
Felt what?
That you were no longer so much a student.
Oh, yes.
And that you had actually... That your work actually...
Yes. Well, I suppose when you start exhibiting, that helps.
Yeah.
Because you then have your work in front of people. And you get art criticism.
Got a lot of critic. Do you teach art?
Not anymore.
No, okay.
But except, if a group wants some help, I'm happy to help.
Okay.
But I don't... I don't have time, actually. I'm up at the hospital a lot. And, that's it, you know.
So, I'm just looking for a way to finish this myself. do you have any... I mean, the road of an artist, whether it's painting or writing or whatever, is challenging, you know. Do you have any advice for anyone that has...
Well, the main thing is to try and sort of find out what medium you want to use, what you feel best with. If you go to a life class, it's a very good start. And then show with a group is a good idea. I aim to do something. We were very excited to have a show at Ballarat recently. Which went very well at the regional gallery.
Yeah.
That was good. And, you know, to aim for something is a good idea. Not necessarily anything too major to begin with, but... but, you know, to have something in mind, I think, helps instead of just pottering around on your own.
You're clearly a pretty happy person.
I am.
Have you always been happy?
Oh, everyone has their ups and
downs. Yeah, sure, but have you always...
I think I forget what I don't want to remember.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
Yes, I think that was the most sensible thing in the whole lot.
Still crazy after all these years. Still